Give me an O. Give me a T. What does that spell? Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to EE Journal's longstanding EE podcast, hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. And why, yes, we are celebrating IoT Day, which was earlier this week on April 9th. So let's get right to it, shall we? Please welcome Lou Ludostansky from Avnet. Lou and I are talking about the greatest considerations and challenges to getting an IoT project off the ground, and what you can do if you get stuck in that awful place called IoT purgatory. Let's go. Hi, Lou. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Amelia. Glad to be here.
Okay, so Lou, we are here to talk about IoT this week, but first, let's start from the bottom up. What do you think are the biggest challenges and considerations to getting an IoT project off the ground?
I think the biggest challenge is trying to figure out why the customer is going to do IoT in the first place, what use case they have, and then preparing internally their organization for the transformation that's going to occur when they actually go to implement the IoT.
Okay, Lou, so this is kind of a big question, but why do you think IoT projects are so challenging to begin with?
I think use case and people wondering why they're doing them in the first place, but I think the other incredibly challenging thing is the complexity of an IoT implementation. I think we talked about OT, operation technology, meaning IT, information technology, and how people who understand one normally don't understand the other. And I think the marriage of those two, along with the implementation of all the complexities of the end-to-end solution, make it very, very challenging.
So, Lou, I heard an interesting term the other day. It was IoT purgatory. Now, explain to my audience, what exactly is IoT purgatory?
IoT purgatory is referenced in the industry that's become more than standard because it afflicted so many people, but it's where you're deep into an implementation that continues to go on and on and on, usually funded by the person that's doing the work trying to get the business, and with no end in sight or goal line or definitive time or intent of actually turning that product or that implementation into an actual project.
All right, Lou, so say I'm in IoT purgatory, what would you recommend to help me get out of it?
I think if you're in purgatory, you know, the first thing you need to do is step back and go back to the customer and make sure they have a sound business place. Make sure that they've got buy-in from multi-disciplines within the company, that the business transformation they're trying to implement in IoT is understood. And make sure they're willing to make some kind of commitment in either time or money to the progression of the IoT. You know, oftentimes people come and they want to jump right into the technology without even, you know, stopping to wonder why. And, you know, the fact of the matter is if you don't know why, you're probably never going to get there. And you need to make sure that within your organization, the organization understands what you're trying to do and actually affirms the project, or else you're not going to have funds to be able to complete anything anyway. And you're really funding is another problem that even if you get to a point where you've met the target objective in your IoT implementation, if there's no funding, then I guess you get out of purgatory, but you come up empty-handed.
Okay, so Lou, let's bring this back to Avnet. Now, say I'm starting an IoT project tomorrow. What can Avnet do to help me get my project up and running?
I think Avnet can do several things. One, we have an IoT readiness workshop for customers that they can attend. It happens from time to time in various cities, and we try to rotate it around, where you bring in technical and non-technical people and people that might be participating or impacted by the business transformation that the IoT implementation is going to impact, and bring them together and take them on a journey on what is IoT, why do you do it, where do you start it, what are the business cases, down to the implementation, the basis that you need to be covering for a successful implementation, through the maintenance of the IoT implementation through its life. So that's the first thing. If we get to a point beyond that where you're ready to go begin an actual implementation, we actually offer advisory services where we'll come in with a group of your executives and brainstorm on all the potential things you could do in IoT and the selection of one or two that would be the most impactful that we could start on. And then after that, define the proof of value that we would do to be able to demonstrate that capability, followed by the implementation plan for actually scaling that and maintaining that over the life cycle. So again, it's kind of a larger group of explaining to masses of people that don't understand that IoT is a technology play that's used to implement business transformation, get them to understand that piece through the end, and then offering that custom service specifically for them where we can take them on a journey from device through gateway, through cloud, through dashboard, through analytics, through application.
All right, Lou, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I know you've been on Fish Fry in the past, but I don't think I've actually asked you this question. So, if you had one meal left on planet Earth, that's it, one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Gotta be lobster. I know lobster originally was fed to prisoners because it wasn't a delicacy at the time, but I am a lobster fan. I've made a trip to Mecca in Maine and fish for lobster or man the traps, and I take every opportunity I can to eat lobster.
Nice, good choice. And I think that's the first ever lobster answer on Fish Fry. Well, Lou, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me. It's always a pleasure speaking with you.
Thanks, Amelia. Always a pleasure to be here.
A podcast about IoT would be completely amiss without the dreaded S word, security. Now, we've probably all heard about the various hacking attempts on fish tanks, and baby monitors, and the like. And yes, we should all be concerned about how security is implemented into our consumer IoT devices. But let's take that a step further. What about security in our medical devices, our pacemakers, our robotic limbs, our smart insulin pumps? What then? Do we need to worry about that too? I mean, how do we secure the human body? Well, some researchers at Purdue University have come up with some pretty inventive ways to address this issue. Let me introduce you to the Electro-Quasi-Static Human Body Communications, or EQS-HPC. So, before we get into all of that, let's take a quick step back and review how exactly these implanted medical devices communicate. Right now, when we have a pacemaker or one of those new fancy insulin pumps, those devices use Bluetooth technology to send and receive signals, up to about 33 feet. But if a hacker was, say, within that 33 feet, there is a possibility that they could intercept that signal and hack into it. Before you freak out, no, there haven't been any recorded hacking attempts along these lines yet. But eek, right? But what if we could make the human body a closed network? Well, that's exactly where Purdue University comes in. They are currently working on a prototype that looks like a slightly larger than normal watch that works in conjunction with those electro-quasi-static human body communications I mentioned earlier, and the conductive properties of the body itself to transmit carrier-less, low-frequency radio signals along the interface between the skin and its surroundings. So, what exactly does this do? Two things. First, that signal stays super close to the body, transmitting never more than a centimeter away, and uses almost 100 times less energy than your standard Bluetooth connection. But that's just for now. In the future, these Purdue researchers contend that this new technology could not only improve the security of our implanted medical devices, but it could also allow those devices to be reprogrammed without surgery and lead to the replacement of drugs with closed-loop bioelectronic medical devices. And then maybe even high-speed brain imaging for neuroscience applications. Purdue University lead researcher Shrena Sen puts it like this. The challenge has not only been keeping this communication within the body so no one can intercept it, but also getting higher bandwidth and less battery consumption. So, not only could this new technology make our implants more secure, but also increase battery life and give us higher bandwidth at the same time? Whoa. So if you want to check out more information about this new technology, I've included a link to a video of it in action and a link to a white paper called Enabling Covert Body Area Network Using Electro-Quasi-Static Human Body Communication. And as always, you can check out both of these links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. Now, here on Fish Fry, we love our food. You might have noticed. And late last year, I reported on an interesting study from Hoffman and Krempner where ultrasonic sensors are now being used to help usher in a whole new era of cheese making. But this week, how about we take this IOC, yes, that would be Internet of Cheese, to a whole nother level. Direct to your kitchen. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Go straight to creamy, cheesy goodness. Let me introduce you to the Fromaggio, the world's first smart, automatic home cheesemaker. But before you break out the crackers and that good bottle of wine you've been saving, this new kitchen countertop device is only on Kickstarter for now. But I'm guessing it will be coming to a Sharper Image or Bed Bath & Beyond sooner than later. This campaign raised its desired number of funds in 3 hours. Yep, you heard me right, 3 hours. Now, unless it goes the way of that coolest cooler business, we'll probably see it pretty soon. Now, how exactly does it work? Well, the Fromaggio Kickstarter team says it takes only 3 steps to make perfect, homemade, safe-to-eat cheese. And it can make all sorts of different kinds of cheese, including almost any type of soft or hard cheese, and yogurts, too. And get this, it can take as little as 30 minutes to make some of the softer cheeses, like mozzarella, and only 48 hours to make some of those stinky, yummy, complex, hard cheeses. So, as you can probably imagine, the I in this IOC in the Fromaggio setup does come with a connected, via Bluetooth, mobile app, where you can read instructions, control the machine, order ingredients, and even customize and share recipes. So, this is how it works. And yes, it is shockingly simple. And ladies and gentlemen, as a side note, I have made cheese in the old-fashioned way, and this is a game changer. Okay, step one, pour in the milk, rennet, that's the curdled milk part, and the specific cultures for the type of cheese you want to make. Then step two, you choose either the default cheese setting or customize your own in the app. And then step three, just wait for the Fromaggio to do its magic. All right. So it's that last magic step where the real hard work takes place. The Fromaggio heats the milk to the appropriate temperatures and intervals, mixes the milk, cuts the curd, drains the whey, and then presses the cheese. And one of the hardest parts of the old-fashioned, non-connected cheese making is the sanitation part. This Fromaggio team claims that their setup is extremely easy to sanitize, maintain, and reuse. All right, sign me up. Now, as I said earlier, this Kickstarter campaign was fully funded in about 3 hours, so all of the pledge levels aren't available now. But as of the launch of this here podcast, you can still get one of these cheese-making bad boys for around $299 while they last. The next pledge level up will get you one of these Fromaggio cheese-making kits for only $349. Okay, fine print time. They will not be shipping until May of 2020, so you're going to have to wait a little bit for that homemade Parmesan. And they are only shipping to select countries. Yes, the United States is one of those select countries. Phew. And this Kickstarter campaign will be ending in a couple weeks. So if you're a cheesehead like myself, you'll need to jump on this one quick. The retail price is going to be at least another couple hundred bucks or more. So if you want to check out this Kickstarter campaign for yourself, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If LinkedIn is more your thing, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And don't forget, our Twitter handle is EEJournalTFM. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of April 12th, 2019, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.